You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
It's Sam Cedar, launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Credo Mobile. With Credo, your voice reflects your values. Check out credomobile.com/majority for details.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, December 28th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of, not just casual Friday, casual 2012, ladies and gentlemen. I am so bloated from the leftover cookies and cake and ice cream and the alcohol I've been ingesting to deal with my family. Oh my God, I've been away from work for 5 days now. I don't know what to do with myself. It's all been cleaning and no cooking. I've just been living on ice cream. I barricaded myself in the closet right now just to get away from my family, which is not to say that I don't love them. I do. I love them so much that I want to give them a break from me. So I'm now hiding in a closet, trying to stay away from them. And it's so casual that we've decided to do a compilation of some of the best Casual Friday 2012 appearances of the year. So that means the actor, Richard Kind, giving us a movie recommendation from a very special location. Michael Ian Black, the comedian. So funny. Giving us a movie recommendation from another special location. And Jonathan Crone, do you remember him? He was just a kid 6 or 7 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, and spoke at CPAC. And he grew up and developed intellectually and emotionally and no longer identifies himself as a conservative wunderkind that he was praised at the time. And, of course, 2012 would be a best of 2012 would be remiss if we didn't include at least one conversation I had with the charming Catherine Harris, near senator, former secretary of state, and former congresswoman from Florida. She's a little bit batty.
And she's definitely not Janine Garofalo.
Oh, she doesn't like it when you say that.
She's definitely not Janine Garofalo.
Right. Catherine Harris doesn't like it when you say that she's not Janine Garofalo. So, folks, enjoy that. Plus, we'll have a couple of our 2012 goodies for you. We will be back live on the 2nd of January on Monday. We will have, we'll have for you a another show. And then on Tuesday, we'll have another show, right? All right. We'll be back after. Stick around. Wait, what are you looking at me, Matt? What?
We don't have a show on we have Monday.
Not a live show, but we have a recorded show on the 31st.
No.
According to my list.
Oh, I'm wrong.
We
look
do.
At that.
You are wrong.
I'm all screwed up here. My list is wrong.
What are you doing here in my house, in my closet?
I don't. Being wrong about things.
Okay. All right, folks, enjoy the show.
I can't walk the streets now. Chicago.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. What a pleasure, what an honor for us to welcome to the program the star of stage and screen, and frankly, screen.
Frankly, canceled programs.
And can't cancel programs. Of course, that comes with the territory. Of course, I'm speaking of the great Richard Kind. Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
I can't hear any applause.
You can't.
I hear no applause.
Are you serious? You can't hear any applause? Hold on. Will you turn up the sound in the? We're just turning up the. That's what happened to that guy who was on.
Thank you.
What was his name now? He was on Chico and the Man. He couldn't hear any of the applause either. Or was it the laughter?
Jack Albertson.
Freddie Prince.
Oh, Freddie. Oh, of course. I can't hear the laughter, of course.
Right, of course.
Oh, good night's reference. Very good reference.
Oh, well, thank
now,
you.
I have to tell you, I am on a golf course right now.
You are Richard Kind hitting the links. Fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm actually hitting the ball well. My short game, not so much.
Huh.
But I'm going to hit a ball right now. Do you want to entertain everybody while I just hit a ball really, really quickly? Is
sure.
that okay?
Yes, of course. Are you driving? Tell us what the club selection is.
It is a par 3, about 180 yards uphill. I'm going to hit a 4-iron. I'm sure the people who love politics are dying to hear about
it. No,
this.
Well, you're going to give us a movie recommendation. I'm going to do the play-by-play. So, Richard,
stepping
up to
you know
ball,
what? I've
got a 4-iron.
Speaker, can you hear me?
Yes. Here we go.
You can hear me?
Yes, I can hear
you.
Yeah,
the phone is right by the ball. Literally. Can you hear this? Did you hear that?
Yes! That's a nice stroke.
That is my swing. Hold on.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my God. I hit the audience.
Did you hit the ball? Did you hit the ball?
Not only did I hit the ball, I hit it beautifully.
Well, there you go.
That's me. I need an audience.
This is impressive. Now,
This is what I need. All right, let's talk. I can talk now.
Are you in like? Where are you playing in, like Cabo or somewhere fancy,
like New Jersey?
Oh,
like New Jersey, like outside Tenafly.
There you go. Hey, make sure you stop by the.
New Jersey.
There's a great TGIF in Paramus. You should check out.
I am so near Paramus. a TGIF in Paramus.
Oh, there's a wonderful TGIF in Paramus. Try the mozzarella sticks.
Okay, with the marinara.
Of course.
What are mozzarella sticks without marinara?
So now this is the life of an actor who's recently been on a series that got canceled.
No. This is the life of an unemployed actor. I'm playing golf with two businessmen and a dentist. They're all working. Isn't this sort of your audience? Isn't this your target audience?
Dentists, businessmen,
and a dentist.
Yes.
Taking Friday off.
Of course. That's fantastic.
Of course. Right?
You're living the life.
I am.
How was Luck? I mean, it was fun, though, right?
Oh, Sam, it was the best. It was the best, but I got to tell you, and honestly, to those, this is the first interesting thing I'm going to say on your program so far.
Okay.
To those who are listening, PETA has its heart in the right place, but its brains are up its ass. I believe in everything that PETA does, except they are not smart.
Okay, well, now
what
wait
they
a second.
Did,
go ahead, tell us.
What they did to these 50 horses is so tragic. These 50 horses were like Dickens orphans who get saved and get to go to the judge's house and wake up in the fluffy quilts with the pillows. That's what they had. And to protect those horses, they took them away and got, I mean, HBO bought them, so they're going to find good homes. But they had the best food. They had groomers taking care of them. They had vets. Before they shot, each time they had a checkup. These horses are just going to be, you know, horses in a yard, and they, you know, maybe, it's just not as good a life. And PETA thought, oh, we've got to protect them, we've got to protect them. They did the, you know what it's like? It's like the kid who gets born to the alcoholic and the drug users, who gets adopted by the great family, who's given love and everything, and then all of a sudden the alcoholic mom, who has not sobered up, comes back and gets the kid again.
Wow, that's, I've got to catch up on my. I've got to catch up on this. I didn't realize how involved this whole story was. So, what do you say?
Oh, the whole thing is PETA. The thing is, PETA doesn't like horse racing. So, in that sense, they won. Okay, they gave horse racing a bad name. So, I guess in that one, but they took about 400 jobs away from people. They about 50 to 100 horses are not going to be treated nearly as well. I mean, not nearly. I mean, it's like ridiculous. It's like going from, you know, from Manhattan over to Iowa. You know, the difference of what their life is going to be.
Well, Iowa's not such a bad place, Richard. That's a fairly
No. Hold on. I'm not talking about the quality of life. I'm talking about the difference of life, of going from skyscrapers to the plains, of how high their life was, and now it's low. Now it's low.
Well, now, wait. Now,
you understand? I'm not.
Now, so wait a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me get this straight. Now, three horses died, right, during the shooting.
Yes.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
How did they die?
Yeah, over a 2-year period. Well, I can tell you how the last one died. It was before each race, or not before each race, before they're being filmed. They're taken from the stable over to the veterinarian. They get a checkup, and then they go back to the stable until they take them out to the track. Well, on this one, one of the horses probably saw a bird or a squirrel or stepped in a hole and reared up and tripped and fell back, and a bone went to his head, and they had to euthanize him because, you know, but it's like saying... I went to the doctor for a cold, and on the way back from the doctor, I died in a car accident. Did the guy die of a cold, or did he die from a car accident?
So I see. So okay. So this isn't a situation where like they're using the horses in stunts where they've got to jump from a helicopter the horses just died because they died. That could have happened to the horse anywhere, is what you're saying.
Anywhere. And horses are, I mean, I got to tell you, they're beautiful, they're strong, they're lovely and kind, but they're not smart. And horses die. They just do more often than
that. Well, we all die. I mean, but this would have been the functional equivalent.
Right. Yeah, no. But they often die from accidents or from tripping. They're fragile. They're more fragile creatures than anything else. So when a horse dies, it's treated tragic. Remember, these are beloved animals, but they're trained and they're strong and they're beautiful and they live to race. Some of them, it's really sort of lovely. They know when they lose a race. They know when they win a race. They truly know love, and it's very funny how what they're like.
Yeah,
really
now, all I had heard was that their three horses had died, and I guess I had assumed that they had died because in the course
because
of shooting,
they were being overused.
Right.
I think the first one that may have happened. I think that it may have been a day where it was too hot, or I truly don't know what it was. They're not being overused because the American Humane Society is there to monitor everything, as well as people who know and love horses. I mean, there was a wonderful guy, I won't mention his name because I'm sure that he's living in such sadness at people pointing fingers to him, oh, you're the guy. But these people, the horses are their lives. You know, they're going to do everything they can to protect the horse, everything. And it's almost, it's sad. I feel bad for this guy who was handling the racehorses. He handled them at Santa Anita. You know, he knows them. Well, these people know horses backwards and forwards.
Right.
PETA, by the way, does not. PETA does not know horses backwards and forwards. All they know is, the horses are racing. They should be let out to romp and have a good time. Well, who's going to pay you? It costs about $30,000 to $40,000 to keep a horse each year. About $30,000 to $40,000. Well, who's got the money to do that?
Wow.
Honestly, who has the money?
Richard, I had absolutely no idea. Boy, that dentist,
sure. Right,
those dentists and those businessmen must be just like, what is going on? What is going on? You see, so passionate about this horse thing. I had no idea. I really had no idea.
Well, yeah, it's
And now yeah, it sounds like you're about to go out there and start the protest.
No. What I will protest is the power of the internet right now in disseminating wrong facts and figures, and there's no beating it. I tell you what, I'm going to make a putt right now. Okay, can
sure,
you hold on?
Of course, yes, of course.
I'll put you on the speaker.
Yes, of course.
Okay, speaker. Hold on.
And Richard now lines up the putt. This one, I think, breaks a little bit to the left.
Giving me a rhythm.
And it breaks a little bit to the left. And oh.
Oh,
he's going to have to two-putt that, ladies and gentlemen. That's going to hurt him.
I am going to have to two-putt that. You heard exactly right. I'll be finished in 1 second, guys. Hold on. Wait.
Is this great radio or what, ladies and gentlemen? It's like, you get the Masters, and didn't Tiger Woods just won his first tournament in like 3 or 4 years? I wonder if that's
yes,
what...
Did
that bring you back onto the links? Or you go ahead, make a shot, Richard. I know it's...
Hey, no, I've done it. I two-putted it.
It's bad form
now
for me to be talking. I am
in pocket. I am in pocket. Yes, I'm playing music while I'm putting.
I'm so sorry.
Are you out of your mind? You out of your mind, Sam?
Did that bring you back into the green? The Tiger Woods thing or what?
You know, I actually was with somebody the other day who at a golf course said, I will pay I'll bet you $10,000 that Tiger Woods does not win another major. This was like 2 weeks ago. And now he'd be $10,000 short.
Was that Mitt Romney who made that bet?
No, nobody would know, but with a name and $10,000 to waste. But yes, he claimed that Tiger Woods was never going to. Will he be the Tiger Woods we used to know? I hope to God, but he's a good golfer.
All right. Now, Richard, I'm looking at your IMDb page. I want to ask you a question. Now, I want you to say, I'm going to ask you what has been, because you've been on so many sort of iconic shows.
Yes.
You know, Mad About You, Spin City. I mean, of course, you were in A Serious Man, which was... an incredible
Curb Your Enthusiasm will probably go down.
But I'm talking as a regular, as a staple too, right? I mean, and
yes.
What was of the?
I should be much wealthier than I am.
Well, you know, I know you go out, you play golf on Fridays. You know, you could be using this time right now to be, I don't know, selling. You could be doing all sorts of different things. I mean,
paving roads. You're absolutely right.
You're absolutely right. Doing anything. What was the funnest thing that you've ever been in? I don't want you to say those two episodes of Spin City that I was on.
I got to tell you, I think that when I do plays, that's where I have the most fun.
Really?
That's usually the most enjoyable. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to be doing a play on Broadway, starting rehearsals in August, previews in October.
What is the play?
It's called The Prince of Broadway. And it is a retrospective of Hal Prince's shows from the Pajama Game up to the present.
Wow.
It's
awesome.
Unbelievable. That's Phantom of the Opera and West Side Story and Sweeney Todd and the Pajama Game and Damn Yankees. And it goes Follies and On the Way to the Forum. It just goes on and on and on. On and on and on. Cabaret. Everything. He's won 27 Tony Awards, Hal Prince has.
Wow.
So you can imagine what this is going to be. It's really great.
That sounds like fun.
Yep.
I've actually seen you. We were at the RFK. There was an RFK, I think we mentioned that there was a RFK event, Ripples of Hope, and you did a tremendous monologue. And there was several actors who came up and did monologues of people who. What was that monologue of?
I don't remember.
Yes.
But it was here's what I do remember. They were all prisoners of their political prisoners in some country. And it was a guy who was a political prisoner, and I read his words.
And it was pretty amazing because
they were not mine.
You know, I got to say that there were other great actors there. They did a great job. But Nikki and I both looked at each other afterwards and goes, Richard was amazing. And I, you know, I had no doubt, but I mean, to, you know, I hadn't seen you sort of perform in that type of, you know, that type of work. You know, I'd seen you perform live, but it was you and I going back and forth on Spin City. The material was just not as meaty.
That is true. But did you watch any of Luck?
Yes, of course. We watched every episode. You were great in that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you saw me do Luck, I guess you would figure that I could do that.
Well,
that
we speech. Saw but, Luck after that.
Oh, okay. All right. So, yes, that speech is, well, it's gorgeous. I mean, and heartfelt, because probably I put into it what I felt for the guy. I mean, there's you know, the horrors of being a political prisoner. Now I'm talking your audience's language. But it really was. It was quite, quite beautiful. But that was a whole beautiful evening.
It
that
was.
That was a great, great evening. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was very, very honored to be asked to be there, much to speak. I mean, like you said, there are great people up there.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. All right, well, now let's because I don't want to interfere with your golf game. What do you hit?
Okay, I am going to hit my drive.
Okay, yeah, let's
right
hear it.
Now.
Let's
so
hear the drive.
So well, I mean, I'm now walking to my club.
Okay.
To pick it up.
And what are you going to hit? A 3-wood, a 1-wood, a driver? What is it going to
be? A 1-wood is also considered a driver.
Right.
I'm telling liberals about them.
He's checking with us.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I'm going to put the phone down and now hit my shot. Hold on.
Okay. And Richard, we're looking at about 250 yards to the green, par 4. Richard's using the 1-wood. He's had a little trouble with this lately. Driving a little bit to his left. He's made some small adjustments with his stance. And there he is.
You hit a very good ball. Since I have been on the show with you, I have hit very good.
Well, there you go. You know, that's what it's all about. It's about relaxing. Sometimes they say you play golf better when you're not really there.
That's exactly right. But I also hit my driver. Do you want to hear the story of my driver? I'll tell you real quick.
Oh, yeah, please.
One time for charity, it's like ridiculous, but you know these things. For charity, I was auctioned off for lunch on like eBay or something, and somebody could pay to have lunch with me. It's ridiculous, but nevertheless, it happened.
I would do it.
So, okay. You, I want to have coffee with. All I want to do is have coffee.
Yeah, I'll
but
pay,
anyway,
I'll pay.
So this guy who's a, he's a violin maker in Japan, who, a lovely man named Louis Caparelli. He's a violin maker, an American who moved to Japan, and he probably missed America and American TV. So he bid on me and we had lunch and I had a lovely time. And then about a year and a half, 2 years later, he calls to say he's in LA. Do I want to get together for dinner or drink? And I said, I can't because I'm doing a play, but come see the play. And he comes, and then I invite him for drinks afterwards, and we have a lovely time. To say thank you, he was making a violin for the president of this very, very wonderful golf corporation in Japan called Hanma, H-O-N-M-A.
Uh-huh.
And their clubs are way too expensive for America, you know, to get them over here, and they're really beautiful. And he had the president make me a driver.
Wow.
And that's what I'm hitting. If you were to see this thing, it's so beautiful. It's gold. It's really beautiful. And it's like worth $1,500, $2,000.
Oh, my God.
And that's, so it really is nice. So that's
you
what I just hit, and I hit well.
You really choose your dinner partners well.
Yes, I do. I was very, very lucky. All right, what is the question? What do you need to ask me? Because I'm going to be hitting
what
a ball
is, what is
really,
the movie
really
that you would recommend for me to see on Netflix either this weekend or maybe coming up during the school vacation?
The movie that I tell everybody to rent because people have not seen it, but it is the best of its kind. It's hilarious. It's fun. It's, I shouldn't say it's hilarious. It's interesting. It's a great movie. Witness for the Prosecution.
I've never even heard of it.
Witness for the Prosecution. It's made in 1959. It's Charles Laughton. Elsa Lanchester, Marlena Dietrich, Tyrone Power, directed by Billy Wilder, based on an Agatha Christie.
Witness for the Prosecution.
And,
what's so great about
Witness
it?
Witness for the Prosecution. It's fantastic. Everything is great about it. Everything. I can't begin to tell you how great a movie it is.
Wow.
It's just fun. It's a fun, great. It's black and white, so you gotta, you know, there are people who don't like black and white.
Well, I'm not one of those.
Great.
No, well, that's fantastic.
Okay. Yeah, can you hold on 1 second? I'm going to hit my ball. Can you hold on just for
yes,
one more second,
course.
Please?
Here we go.
Okay,
this
bye-bye.
Is Richard's second shot. Ooh, sounds like a 7-iron. And Richard pulling the 7-iron. It's got about 150 yards to the pin. Probably should be using a 6-iron here, Richard's. Not quite got the distance with that 7-iron that one might want. And there you go.
That's the first bad shot I hit. That's the first bad shot I hit, and then I got away with it.
What were you hitting?
I hit a 4-iron, but it did not go.
Mm,
I didn't hit it like I wanted.
6-iron, like I suggested.
I should
be caddying for you. Well,
yes, you should.
Richard, I can't thank you enough. In the movie this week, folks,
okay.
Witness for the Prosecution.
Witness for the Prosecution, directed by Billy Wilder. Don't get any other version. There was one made with, I think, Elliot Gould and Sybil. So not good. See the original Witness for the Prosecution with Tyrone Power, Charles Laughton, Elsa Lanchester, Marlena Dietrich. I guarantee you the time of your life. I guarantee
wow.
you. I guarantee you. That is an absolute 4-star movie and nothing short.
Well, if I like
nothing
it, then
short of a 4-star
I will
movie.
Take you out for a cup of coffee one of these days.
Please, for God's sake. Oh, I think I've got myself a cup of coffee. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Richard Kind, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Sam, I'll see you soon.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, folks. Now, you know how particular I am when it comes to accepting ads on this show. It's probably a personality defect. But finally, I can say without hesitation, the Majority Report has a dream sponsor, Credo Mobile, the only progressive cell company in the world of cell companies. Credo not only donates 1% of their revenues to progressive nonprofits you love, that's 1% of revenues, not profits, but they also fund and organize political action dictated by their progressive values. They don't care about maintaining access, and they don't care about not stepping on big funders' toes because their customers are their funders. So they'll fight the Republican Tea Party agenda, but also hold Democrats accountable and push them to the left and against things like chain CPI, whatever. Sound familiar? I hope so. And that's why I'm so psyched Credo is helping me keep this show alive and giving you guys a great offer on cell service. It's really easy to sign up right now. Go to credomobile.com/majority to get 40% off your monthly voice fee for 1 year, true unlimited data, and they'll even give you a buyout credit of $350 to get out of your contract with one of the big corporate providers. But you got to take advantage of this by December 31st. That's just days from now. That's credomobile.com/majority. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to this program. Who, you know, I just I did some research, which basically involved me searching my own site. And it's been a year since we've had Michael Ian Black on the show.
Longest year of my life.
I know. I know. I would see you in person. I would see you, you know, giving interviews, and I would just think, like, why are you torturing Michael this way?
Well, for me, it's like there comes a moment where you're sitting by the phone enough days in a row, and eventually you start to think maybe he's not going to call.
There's a long list of people you're waiting for to hear from, though, too, right? I mean, when you're
no, you
just wow,
you and only you.
I'll tell you what I was doing. I was waiting, and it didn't happen. I was waiting for you to put out 3 books in a 2-month period instead of just 2 before I have you on the program.
The third one comes out in September, Sam. I can only do so much.
You now wait, okay. You're not doing it right, which is the book came out like when in like March, I guess, right?
Yeah, right, beginning of March.
Beginning of March, and then you came out with another book like 3 months later with
Meghan McCain.
Yes, Meghan McCain.
Yeah.
Now wait. First off, okay. First off. How did you end up writing a book with Meghan McCain? And then second off, why would you have that book come out 3 months later, dude? Didn't your publicist say, hey, we got to don't do that?
I would have preferred that it came out later, but we wanted it out before the election. So we had to get it out.
OK.
And
how did you end up writing a book with Meghan McCain?
I tweeted her and I was like, you want to write a book together? And she said, sure.
You told me that the other day. Is that serious? Are you serious?
Yeah. Why is that so hard to believe? This is how people communicate in the 21st century, Sam. They get on Twitter, they tweet each other, they say, hey, you want to be friends? And the other person's like, sure, I'll be friends. And then you go, and then you tweet them and you go, hey, you want to write a book? And they go, yeah, I'll write a book. I just tweeted MSNBC today and said, can I have my own TV show? And they're like, yeah, sure. So I start that tomorrow.
Hold on for a second. I got to check Twitter here. Are you serious? I'm not terribly surprised. You were on Up with Chris the other day. I only caught part of it. How was it?
The tricks?
The what?
What did you ask me?
Weren't you on Chris Hayes' show on Saturday?
Yeah, I was. It was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to go back, I think, next weekend.
You got to be kidding me.
What? Why is that hard to believe?
Well, it's not hard to believe. It's just it's slightly enraging.
But, Sam, you're on Current. I saw you at Current TV just the other day.
Yeah, you were on Current, too. I mean, here's what I'm saying, okay? Like, when I basically leave the comedy business, more or less, to go into sort of like, I mean, I didn't perceive it at the time that I was going into the politics business, but, you know, I spend all my time talking about politics now, which, you know, is not, frankly, to be honest with you, as fun as being in the comedy business.
Sure.
And so I ran into this in 2008. 2008, I'm there covering the Democratic convention, for ostensibly for Air America. And I can't even get a decent seat in the convention hall unless I go around with Sarah Silverman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I got news for
you. She's famous.
Yeah, I understand she's famous. I get that. But it just doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm going to be Joe Biden's date at the convention this year.
I don't doubt it. There is no justice. Look, there is no justice.
Sam,
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Sam.
But you're more political even than Sarah is, I think.
Sam,
what?
You're forgetting one important factor, which is that I'm a genius.
No, I understand.
So all I have to do is dip my toe in whatever pond I spot, and I'm instantly enveloped.
What is the book that you wrote with Meghan McCain? What is it about?
It's about comity, comity.
Uh-huh.
It's about strangers going on a road trip and falling in love with America and with each other. It's called America, You Sexy Bitch.
Wait a second. Did you end up like hooking up with Meghan McCain?
No, we're not like a romantic item, but we're friends, falling in love in a platonic way.
Really? Come on. We can break some news here.
There wasn't even cuddling. There was no spooning. There was nothing.
You know, I mean, so she's nice. She's a nice person. I mean, I have no doubt that she's nice. She seems, people have told me that she's very nice. But, you know, I get annoyed too. I mean, here she's, all of a sudden she's in media because she had a blog. I don't know. I mean, it's everywhere you go. It's all nepotism. You know how it is.
Well, sure, but
you're the only person I know who's actually sort of scratched and clawed their way up and have gotten everything they've ever deserved.
That's right. But there is nepotism with me too, because I'm Jewish and we control the media.
Well, that's true. But I'm Jewish, and how come I'm not getting any of that?
Well, there's only room for so many Jews, Sam.
I understand. You used up all the Jew slots.
That's right. Me and Sarah Silverman are using up the Jew slots.
Yeah.
And you know, John Stewart basically took your job. So what are you going to do? Look, you've got a closet that you broadcast out of. You're doing fine.
That's right. Michael was, I said, do you want to do the show? And he's like, well, can I do it by phone or do I got to come in? I'm like, there isn't room. There's a room for you to come in. We would have to sort of rearrange things to find the room to put a chair in.
You have essentially a broadcasting shtetl.
That's true.
But that's a lot more than a lot of people
have.
Wait, you know?
What was that noise?
Oh, that was me getting in my car because I'm taking my kids to sailing school.
You're taking your kids to sailing school? Is that what they're doing for the summer?
They're going for 2 weeks, yeah.
Was that your...
Three hours a day. Yeah, because I'm trying to pass. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to pass as a goy.
I understand. Of course. Right. What did you name your kids? You don't want to say? Yeah, I don't want to.
I'm trying to think of lots of names.
Yeah, I was going
to say. Brandon and Crystal. There's my kid, Brandon.
You named them both Michael Ian Black, the second and the third. So their names are actually Michael Ian Black Black. Their first names are Michael Ian Black. So look at this. You know, that's the thing. It's the comedy. It's a better life. It's a better life. You're taking your kids out to go sailing. What's up?
I know. It's a better life.
Your kids think I'm funny?
No, they don't. They're laughing. They're laughing at me because I'm funny.
They're laughing at me, not with me. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying they don't even know you exist.
Well, that's what you think, but your kids are tweeting me all the time. You're like our daddy, but funny and nice.
That's right. And you're a dad. You're doing fine.
Yeah, I'm all right. My kids, she's semi into me, not totally.
How old?
Almost seven.
Oh, yeah. Well, if she's not into you now, she's never going to be.
Right. I know.
Prime daddy time. And if she's not displaying a lot of affection for you now, my guess is that that's never going to happen.
How did both your books do? Is one doing, did the one with Meghan McCain, it got you more, that had to get you more sort of like press, right? I mean, how did you work that out? Aren't you supposed to like not do that?
James Patterson does it. He comes out with a book every day.
I don't even know who that is.
You don't know who James Patterson is? Come on, Sam.
Is that the son of, is that John Huntsman's son?
He's the most popular author in the English language. He has like 150 books or something. They're all on the bestseller list.
I don't even know who that is. I mean, look at this is how narrow my worldview is. That's why I'm having to call you to give me a movie recommendation.
All right, then I'll say he's like Tom Clancy or something. Always coming out with new books.
Okay.
That's more of a political reference, the geopolitical reference.
Well, Tom Clancy. Yeah, I have vague awareness of Tom Clancy.
Right. See, Sam, if you just read a little more, studied a little more,
I tried.
Got out a little more, got out of your closet and saw the actual world, you know, you might find a little success in this business.
It's possible.
You can't just be so myopic, Sam.
It's true.
And focused on Nancy Pelosi's brassiere. You have to get out.
I actually think there's some truth to the myopia charge. I mean, I can't, if I go outside in the sun now for more than like literally 90 seconds, I break out in eczema. So I basically stay inside. I'm trying to work out if I can get like a system of tunnels to get back to my apartment.
That's what I'm saying. You know, don't look so hard for the brass ring. Let the brass ring come to you.
Now, speaking of brass ring, what are you doing now in terms of besides your books and making all these appearances on all the news programs?
Unemployed and desperate.
Really? No.
Well,
you always make it sound like you're on the edge of not working, but that you're always working.
Well, but it's always, you know, I'm in a panic, like everybody. Everybody's right. Always in a panic. That's the American way of being these days, and I'm no different.
Really? I mean, you must have something. Seriously?
I do. I'm shooting a movie this month with my old friends, Michael Showalter and David Wayne.
Well,
they're
what
putting
the
together
frick?
A movie.
Why? Are they not paying you well? Because Wayne definitely seems like he's in a position to pay well
for
these.
No, it's a tiny movie. It's a tiny movie.
Well, why doesn't Wayne put you in one of his bigger movies?
I ask myself that question every time he makes one of his bigger movies.
Yeah, it's tough. I go watch these movies, and I'm like, oh, my God, I know everybody in this movie.
Right, but you're in politics now.
Right, and then I go and I look at all the shows on politics, and I go, I know all these people. What's happening? It's unbelievable.
You're a comedian.
Huh?
Because yeah. You're a comedian. You straddle both worlds, but you stand in none.
Exactly. It's highly problematic. So what is the movie you're doing with Showalter? Is this the one that he wrote and Wayne is directing or something like that?
He and David wrote it. David's directing it. Showalter's producing it. It's called They Came Together. And there's a double entendre there, which is purposeful. And it's just a silly rom-com. You know, rom-com parody, I should say.
Who's the lead? Is it Showalter or is it you?
It's Paul Rudd.
Oh.
And Amy Poehler.
How many times can you go to that well?
What do you mean? Paul's too fantastic.
I love Paul. If
I get it. You're jealous of Paul like you're jealous of everybody. I get it.
No. I will say this, though. If Paul Rudd and then about 20 other actors of that ilk didn't exist, I would have had more work 10 years ago.
That's probably true.
But I think Paul Rudd is great. I'm a big fan. They have to give Paul Rudd every job?
Yeah, they do, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's union. It's a union rule now.
Oh, every rom-com needs to have Paul Rudd in it?
You're so pro-union. Why don't you look at some of their bylaws and see how, they're exploiting the rest of us because of their insistence that Paul Rudd be in every rom-com.
This is sort of like a reunion for, what do you call it?
Wet Hot American Summer. Yeah. It's got a lot of the same people in it.
And where is it shooting? Is it going to be like another one of those things? Are we going to read in another 10 years about how this was just sort of like a bacchanalia or whatever it is? I mean, is this going to be some type of every time I read, every time I heard a report of what was going on at Wet Hot American Summer, it was literally like a free love camp.
Yeah, that's what it was. And that's what this will be, a free love camp.
Where is it shooting?
Brooklyn and its environs.
Oh, all right. So it's not going to be like everybody's going to go out into the woods. And I guess this is sort of like the middle age version of what happened with Wet Hot American Summer.
No, this is a proper movie making experience.
I understand. I do remember specifically having a conversation with Wayne back at the time where he's like, we're trying to raise money for this to shoot it on film. I'm like, shoot it on film? That's ridiculous, man. Just do it yourself with a video camera. That's what I did.
I know.
And
I know.
I remember thinking, like, man, he is just going about this all wrong.
Yep.
And it turned out, it was like I was right up all. I was completely right about up into the word wrong.
Right. He's going about this.
All right. Exactly right. He is doing this exactly as you should do it. Is what I should have said at the time. But did you see this with Louis?
What about?
Did you see the thing where Louis sold all these tickets to his show on LouisCK.com? Like he's doing, like a tour. Did you hear about this?
I did see that. Yeah. Was that amazing?
Unbelievable.
I hope he breaks Ticketmaster.
It really is amazing. I mean, there is... What Louis is doing is, in some ways, a very political act. I'm not talking about the comedy that he's doing. I'm talking about just sort of this notion of basically cutting out these middlemen. Now, not everybody can do that.
But he's showing a way that it can't be done. And I'm very impressed with it.
You are obviously very close to the sailing camp, because I can't. You're breaking up a little bit. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can't. I apologize. But I live in the woods, and so when you drive in the woods, sometimes things get a little droppy in terms of calls.
Yeah, you sound all right now. So, well, let's be quick about this. What are we going to do? What movie should I see? It's not going to be Wet Hot American Summer.
This weekend we'll be streaming in. into the world of sexual poverty.
Wait a second. Michael, I can't hear you. You're completely... Michael Ian Black, everyone, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my God. I hope he's okay. I hope he's okay. Well, there it is. I guess we're going to have to just wait. Maybe we'll have him back on. I mean, I remember when we were down performing at a place called Rebar that is not even remotely close to being there anymore, around 17th and 7th. It's in 1994, 95. And Michael was in a slightly younger generation than me. I was sort of caught between two generations, between sort of like Marin's generation and Michael Ian Black's generation, and which, you know, we're talking about 16 months, I think, was what separated everybody. But just in terms of the perception, he did a very funny bit where he sort of brought all the stuff in his house and tried to sell it on stage. It was funny. All right. Well, we'll have to have him back and get the movie recommendation.
We potheads would pay for all the roads. We potheads would pay for all the schools. We won't whine about the tax. We just sit back and relax, because potheads are cool. I said, because potheads are cool. All taxpayers are paying for the jails. We'd like to change these marijuana rules. We won't whine about the tax, now we'll sit back and relax, because potheads are, because potheads are cool.
We are back, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. You'll recall earlier in the week, I think I don't know if we played this in the better half of the program or not, but I replayed a clip that we did on Break Room Live back in the day. I think Marin was absent that day. God knows he slacked off a lot during that show, left me with the yeoman's work. And we talked about a 13-year-old kid, 14 maybe at the time, who had given a speech at CPAC, had become a darling of the conservative world, as you would expect. He was very articulate, and he had written a book, and he was given a speech, which I think I fairly critiqued at the time. And then earlier this week, a story, I think it was in Politico, saying that he had changed. And I'd like to welcome to the show Jonathan Crone. Welcome to the program, Jonathan.
I'm glad I could be here, Sam.
Let's start with this, because you're going to give us some movie recommendations. But let's do a little house cleaning. First off, so I did that piece on Break Room Live, and then you tweeted, and when I was talking about it, I said maybe he watched the show. Did you really watch it? You tweeted me. You said you watched it at the time. You didn't watch it.
I did.
When you were a kid,
I did. I remember when I did the when I gave the speech, I looked at all the media stuff that there was a lot of stuff coming in.
Right.
And it was one of the YouTube videos that came up, I remember, around that time having to do with me, and I saw that video. I remember that. I do remember that.
Like, what did you think at the time? Because I don't think I knocked you personally. I think I was talking about
No, it wasn't as bad as some of the stuff I had said about me. I mean, come on. I've had a lot worse said about me. I mean, and even worse now. I've had probably some of the worst stuff ever said about me after this. So
well, yes.
Nothing.
I mean, nobody likes it when you renounce their positions. The people had really the conservative movement had really, at least at that time, invested quite a bit in you, hadn't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess they had supported my books. They supported my my writing, I guess, and they'd supported me speaking. I just, you know, and I have a piece I'm finishing up for Salon right now, actually, about this, about my personal reflection here. And, you know, part of what I say in there is it's this mentality that a lot of people on the right have that it's so awful that I decided to let myself take time to think about things and maybe just move on. I don't know why they're so upset that I matured. I believe the title I decided upon for the piece is Kid Matures, Conservatives Don't Understand Why This Happens. I don't know why they're so upset and still wondering why this happens. Actually, one of the best things, and I'm not the only one who's critiqued this. A few people, and I think the Young Turks, who actually I'm going to be on their show tonight, but they actually made a joke about this too. The Fox 5 did a big thing making fun of me about because of all this, and they went on there. One of the rips they gave me, and I didn't notice this because I was running out of the. I was in a green room when the show came on for the Fox 5 making fun of me because I had seen a tweet about it, and I didn't get a chance to watch most of it. But apparently, after I left, the Fox 5 went on to say, and he quoted philosophy. Now, when you quote philosophy, that's just you shouldn't be doing that. That's just not cool. It doesn't make you look good. And I'm like, wait, what? Am I not? Is that a bad thing? Apparently, having an education in philosophy, according to the right, according to the Fox 5, and talking about it is a bad thing. Apparently.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, of the Fox 5 have to be the worst of the worst. I mean, they're just
it is. But you know what's sad is that like they have people such as Dana Perino, who is an actual press secretary for a former president. And I just kind of hoped that she'd have a bit more class and say, that's not a nice thing to say about anybody at all. Just give me, and like Greg Gutfeld, who's the most unfunny attempt at a comedian in the history of mankind, he actually went on there and said he would have left me in the woods as a baby. And how is that funny? That is not funny. And they laughed. And then he said, I have, quote, Crohn's disease. That is not funny. That is rude. That is mean to everybody who has Crohn's disease.
Well, I'll tell you, what you're learning, and you'll see this more, is that the notion that you have of adults and the supposed decorum and competence that they have, as you get older, you begin to realize that that is all just a mirage. And the Dana Perinos of the world are the, you know, I mean, we don't see this much in any public life, I think, much the, you know, some measure of decorum. I mean, it's there's a lot of people who go for a buck in that situation. Yes, but you're absolutely right about Greg Gutfeld. And I think
why did anybody give him his own show to be a comedian on? He's not funny.
I got to tell you, Jonathan, you realize that you, from a career perspective, you could have made so much money as that right wing pundit. So much. I mean, I imagine you did okay with the book, but I'm saying, oh, dude, you have no idea what you gave up. Look at Greg Gutfeld. He's people actually think he's a comedian now.
I know. I mean, I don't get it. I really don't. It's kind of sad. But you know, to each his own, I guess. Everybody's entitled to have their own definition of humor, I guess. Just don't impose your own definition of humor on me.
There you go. Well, let me ask a question. So this is what also is sort of fascinating me. Now, you're heading to school. It's been reported you're going to NYU. We can talk about the potential of an internship at a later time, as we are based in New York. But how did it come about that they wrote that Politico wrote a story about you? I mean, was this basically you saying like, oh, I'm going to college. Undoubtedly, people are going to, you know, my stuff is all over YouTube. I got to set the record straight I'm not going to have any friends there.
Yeah. I actually do make mention of that in the Salon piece. And what I see there is that the people who think that I'm doing this to get acceptance at school obviously don't know how the internet works, right? Once you have a video on YouTube, it's in the international, the world consciousness forever,
right?
It's not going away. And you think that just because I go and tell people I've changed my mind, the people in the world, and much less in a school environment, are going to just ignore an easily lambasted speech of a 13-year-old me with a nasally, high-pitched voice ranting about conservatism's four principles? Obviously, anybody who thinks that hasn't met the people that live on the internet. There are people who live on the internet who will make fun of that till I die, and then after that. It's not – so to think that I did this to fit in at school is just crazy. No, I did this because what happened was I had been writing a lot of political humor and satire pieces recently, and I wanted to get some of them published. So I knew Patrick because he had interviewed me before, and so I didn't know, you know, if he had any place for that. And so I sent that to him, and I talked to him about, you know, what I've been doing since I last saw him. And he's always been very nice to me, and he emailed me back and saying, because they don't really do humor pieces. I didn't think – I knew they didn't. I just was seeing if there was some opening he knew. And so he said, hey, how about I do a piece on you and how you've changed? And I said, okay, that'd be fine. I don't care. So we ended up doing that. And I didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. But it turned out to be a lot bigger of a deal to a lot of people than I thought it was going to be. So that's,
well, it's
going to
save you a lot of – I mean, because you undoubtedly would have been at school and you would have had to explain to a lot of people, like, I don't – at least now that part of the conversation is over. You don't have to spend the first year and a half of your school experience sort of just trying to explain to you people, like, I was only 13.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's I didn't want to, that was the other part of it, is I was tired of people who met me on the street or who I'd meet from different things who said they'd seen me on TV and want to say, oh, you're that conservative kid. So when's your next book out? Or I read your book. Or where can I buy? And I don't want. And I have to. It takes like 15 minutes to explain to them what I'm doing now. And I wanted to move on with my life. It's going to be. It would be extremely hard if I had to explain that to people every time, and then have to tell people what I'm doing now. It's hard for me to kind of move on with life and do the other things I'm doing now and try to do that. And that's part of what I hope this brings, I guess. I want people to just kind of see me as a person who does other things than a speech 4 years ago.
Do you regret it? I mean, in the sense that, like, I mean, not so much. Obviously, look, people change and this and that, but it's very hard, as I think as a kid, to, you know, you put yourself out there and, you know, sort of, it seems like in some ways it's going to work out for you in terms of you've been able to sort of in one fell swoop get the redefinition over with and maybe take another step and you'll return to some measure of normalcy. But do you think it's just even a good idea for kids, of that age to be out there? Because, you know, God, I don't know.
I think that the rule of thumb, and this is a thing, and I think this is true. The rule of thumb is that if you're not old enough to have consensual sex, you're not old enough to make consequential political statements. That's the rule of thumb.
At least that's going to go out onto YouTube. I mean, everybody, you know, sitting at home, you know, you're arguing with your parents, okay, but, you know, you don't want to be locked in like in amber because
that's my point. That's my point. You shouldn't take people that are that young so seriously. And I mean, you, first of all, you shouldn't take anybody as seriously as a lot of people took me anyway. That's the lesson I learned about this. politics, in a lot of ways, people are not as serious as they want to be. You know, their comments are not should not be taken. Every comment you hear in any kind of serious context should be taken with a grain of salt in any field. Much in politics more than any other, though. Because people say crazy stuff. People say stuff they're going to regret later in life. People have high emotions in this divisive climate that we live in today. To think that people are going to just say stuff that is 100% correct and that they'll never change their mind on is an idiotic way to live. It is. To think that that's how the world works. You know, we have to kind of laugh at everything. You got to kind of find the humor in everything. And I think that's kind of how I developed my sense of humor about this and why I've enjoyed writing satirical stuff now, and why and that's why I have vowed to only write less serious political stuff from now on. I will only do political humor or something that I'm allowed to laugh at, because I don't want to do something where it's going to be an issue, because it's so divisive. I don't want to be a part of this divisiveness and this battle and this war that goes on between the left and the right.
At what point, I mean, so you're 13 or 14, I guess, when the book came out, and I want to at what point did things start to change, or when did you get off the circuit? I mean, was it were like a year later? Were you like, well, that was a weird time in my life? And
I don't know exactly how to explain it. It was just after the book came out, and I did all the promotion for that. I guess, you know, I just stopped and thought about it, and you know, there were still events that I ended up doing, but I did it kind of, you know, I was still kind of questioning what I was thinking about, and I didn't know what it was I really did believe as an individual. So I really wanted to take time away and not do anything else but just think. So that's really where when I started reading a lot of philosophy, and it started giving me the opportunity to be engaged in something else,
right,
other than politics, and take my mind away from that. And I think that's important that everybody try and do that. It might not work for everybody, but everybody should have the opportunity to, you know, take time away from everything else and just sit down and do something besides what they've been doing forever.
Yes.
You know, just let your mind relax. And philosophy let me do that. It let me relax my mind by focusing on something else and focusing all my energy on that, and not even thinking about politics for a while. You know, I still kept up with the news, but, you know, I didn't focus my energy on it. And it just made me a better person, I think.
What was the dynamic in high school? I mean, were there other kids, you know, I mean, I imagine you didn't have sort of some type of explicit bright line where, you know, you had an assembly at high school and said, I just want everybody to know, like, I'm not really so much on board with all that stuff that I was doing in junior high.
Yeah, but in high school, I mean, even though there are kids who are really involved in politics,
right,
it's a lot. I mean, it's not as
right. The Justin Bieber debates are bigger than anything else.
Well, I don't know anybody in high school that liked Justin Bieber.
I'm sorry, buddy. I got a 6.5-year-old. That's all I hear now is Justin Bieber debates and Katy Perry's better.
I'm just saying, man. It's like in high school, you know, everybody's a bit more mature than I would like to think. Everybody I knew was a bit more mature than, you know, that kid was the kid who said something before he ever came here.
Right.
You know, no, people aren't like that. People are rude regardless of what age they are.
Right.
So, I mean, there were people who were not nice to me for other reasons, mainly because I was a nerdy individual. It had nothing to do with what I wrote. But yeah, most people didn't even know that I had done all that, you know, in the past. And they didn't know it until later, until I tried to, you know, say what I've done with my life and this is who I am, and try to tell them about myself, you know. So that was the only time people learned about it. And it really wasn't as big a point of controversy as anything else that goes on in high school.
Have your parents been cool about this whole thing? I mean, they have to be. They have to be
they've been really nice.
I mean, proud of the fact that you're sort of like obviously intellectually engaged. I mean, if my kid, you know, came to me and told me that, she was reading Nietzsche. And I don't care what that led her to. I'd be like, oh, well, that's, wow, you're smarter than your dad.
I agree. Sorry, I was reading. I'm just like, my dad called me a flaming liberal. and I asked him, "What do you know what that means? Why are you calling me flaming? I'm pretty sure that I'm not a flaming liberal." "No, you're pretty flaming," he replied. So,
well, if it makes you feel better, when my father, when I left law school, he said that my sideburns were a sign that I was embracing communists.
Oh yeah, communists, okay.
So, and my father, I think, is left of center. I think there's just a difficulty that parents have watching their kids grow.
I think that I'm just more center left than I am any flaming whatever. They're both very proud of what I've done with my life.
Good.
They're very proud of who I am, and they're supportive. flaming liberal comments aside, it's been fine.
All right, before we get to the movie recommendations, I have to ask you a couple of questions. You're in the green rooms with guys like Newt Gingrich. I've seen pictures of you guys hanging out and all sorts of conservative luminaries. I seem to remember like Bill Bennett. I don't know if he sent you a gift basket or whatever it was. But, I mean, were any of these guys, was there any particularly good stories that you had in your experience?
No, nothing particularly juicy. I think the juiciest thing that you're going to get is the picture of me with Andrew Breitbart, James O'Keefe in the pimp suit, and Karl Rove.
Now, wait a second. That wasn't that long ago.
That was 2-3 years ago. That was when the book came out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was when I was doing the promotion for the book, actually. I went on with Karl Rove. Yeah.
Wow.
But that... That's probably, and I there have been a lot of tweets about that, calling it the picture of the day yesterday, and people saying one of them grew up and it was the smallest one. So yeah, I mean there were a lot of great comments about that photo in particular.
I would imagine. Did you get job offers? You must have got a ton of job offers.
I really, believe it or not, I didn't get as many as people seem to think I did. Because I never really tried to do that much with that because I was still 14.
Right.
I wasn't thinking about that as much. And it's not, and people think that I got so much money off of that book. I didn't. Authors don't get paid that much money.
I know.
The people who say that obviously have never been authors.
Right. You have to really be like. You have to
be a New York Times bestseller to make a lot of money off your book.
Indeed. Yeah. Believe me. I know. All right. Well, it's a very fun story, and for obvious reasons. And you're an impressive kid. I disagreed with you when you were 13. It was definitely a fun story at the time. And now you're a little more. You're getting interested in film. Is that what you're going to major in at NYU?
I'm majoring in philosophy, but I want to do filmmaking. I was thinking of doing film writing. I love philosophy so much, and I still love film. And there are a lot of great film writers and filmmakers who did philosophy. Wes Anderson, for instance, and I believe it was Joel Cohen who did philosophy as well. You know, they both did. Those are both philosophy majors. So I mean, I know that it's something I can still.
Oh no! You're smart. Get a good education, and your filmmaking will always be better.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm still doing that though. I mean, obviously, I've been working on a screenplay and trying to make that work. And that's a lot harder than anything I've done because it's so hard to get funding for that kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
As you know.
That's a long road to hoe, buddy. Road to hoe. All right. Well, so. Apropos of your interest in filmmaking, every Friday we have somebody on to give me movie recommendations for the weekend. Now, you will find as you get older and you get entrapped by a spouse and a child, if you so desire, or make that mistake, you will find that you're not allowed to go out and see movies that often. And so every movie you see becomes precious. Every time that you have an opportunity to spend 90 minutes without having to deal with all the horribleness of a family. I'm exaggerating for effect, Jonathan.
My mother hates Quentin Tarantino and any film that has any violence in it. So when I'm alone and I get an opportunity to watch a film without her rolling her eyes at what I'm watching, I understand the getting away from.
Oh, that's why I take business trips. It's just so to be able to watch like some action movie in the on the hotel movie pay for movie system. It's the only reason why travel. All right, so what do you got? You got a couple of recommendations?
All right, I got something very kind of obscure. I got a few films for you, but have you seen Black Dynamite yet?
No.
Okay, you need to go see that film. There are some people who don't like it and some people who do. The reason I mention it is, it's an obscure-ish, not really. I guess it's not too obscure anymore because Adult Swim picked it up to make a cartoon series based off of it starting this month, actually.
Wow.
So, I was surprised about that. I just saw that a few days ago, and I was like, oh, that's cool. So the film is about, it's essentially a spoof of blaxploitation, which is a subgenre of exploitation films from the 70s, as well as it doesn't just spoof that. It also spoofs old kung fu movies and action films, all while making itself an alternative history film. And you don't really get that it's an alternative history film until the very end of the film, where
ruin it.
Okay, I will not ruin what happens. I will only say, because they go to the White House, so there is a lovely nunchuck battle between Richard Nixon and the main character.
I remember when this came out. I never saw it.
Yeah, it was. What'd you say?
I never saw it, but I do remember when it came out.
It wasn't a mainstream film. I mean, it was an indie film that didn't. It was relatively low budget, and then they got a good bit of. I think they got a good bit of funding when they first started pitching it, and then I remember what happened. And then it was a cult success for a while because a lot of people have liked it. And I know there have been various reviews. I know Roger Ebert even liked it, which I was surprised because it's not a very. I didn't think it was really his style of film. It's a very weird film. It's one of those films you have to watch to kind of understand why it's good. It's very absurd. The humor is extremely absurdist. They have all the music in the film, except for I think one song, is written by the writer who also plays the main character. And all the songs are actually literal descriptions of what's physically going on in the story. So it's just a very absurd film. And if you're not interested in that kind of thing,
Hold on for one second. It's Name Drop Friday here, and Chris Spencer plays Militant Number One as I look it up. And I did a TV show with Chris Spencer almost 20 years ago now. Well, closer to, I guess, 18. It's Name Drop Friday. So there you go. That's the best I got. He's about 14th down on the list of credits. So it's not terribly impressive, but, we got another one.
Yeah. I've another film that I recently saw that was another independent weird film was, Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which is a very weird film. It's a spoof film of horror films, especially like the and romantic comedies. It's a spoof film of all that. It's a very weird film. It got a lot of really good reviews, which I was really surprised. Because it was not like a really traditional film. It was a good film. It's the director's first film, so I was really surprised about that too. It was well done. It was funny because of its spoof of horror films and the way they did it by completely turning it around. What it's about is it's about a couple of hillbillies who buy a cabin in the woods near a lake, and a bunch of college students who go down camping at the lake, and the stereotypes that these college students have about the hillbillies, and they start thinking that their axe murderers are going to come kill them, and they end up there's a bunch of hijinks there. So it's really funny. Those are some very obscure-ish films that I've watched recently. I've watched a lot of good films, but those were some of the most recent obscure-ish films that I thought you'd appreciate.
Those are great picks, and I'm sure they're available on Netflix or Amazon or one of the streaming devices that I use.
Probably. I know, I'm pretty sure Black Dynamite definitely would, because it's gotten a lot of traction recently because of the Adult Swim thing, so it'll probably be on some, it'll probably be on one of them.
Fantastic. Well, Jonathan, I gotta thank you very much. I want to check in with you, and see how you're doing. Maybe have you come back on, because these are good movie recommendations.
Absolutely, I'd love to.
All right, well, congratulations. We'll keep an eye out. Somebody just IM'd me, asked if you want an internship on the Majority Report. We can talk about that later, buddy.
All right.
It's not exactly fancy around here. You probably will have other opportunities, but thanks so much for joining us, Jonathan. Really appreciate it.
All right, loved it.
Good luck. Good luck with school.
All right, you too.
Free Enterprise was under attack by Newt Gingrich's super PAC. Then he retracted, but by then the cat was out. Also joining in was the governor of Texas, talking about vulture capitalist excesses, 'cause protecting the downtrodden's what they're all about. No, said the elephant, besides you guys are irrelevant. You had your chance and you didn't do shit, so we're sticking with Ben and his lies, because it's Free Enterprise. The point is moot and the point is mint. The opposition is split and in fits, and the general, they'll all come crawling back to the tent. In a quiet room, in a penthouse suite, we can ignore the envious rattle in the street. We'll talk about how much we've got and how much more we'll get when they make Mitt president. Yes, said the elephant, besides you guys are irrelevant. You had your chance and you didn't do shit, so we're sticking with Mitt and his lies, because it's Free Enterprise.
We're getting a call here.
All right, my computer. Hello?
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 Hello? Samuel?
Yes?
Samuel, it's Kathy.
Oh my gosh.
It's Kathy.
Kathy?
Don't you old bowl of soup, don't you pretend you didn't know I was going to call.
I'm sorry, did you call me an old bowl of soup?
I called you an old bowl of soup.
Oh.
You're just full of piss and vinegar tonight. I don't even care because I'm so happy the convention. Oh!
Wait, are you at the convention right now?
Yes!
Oh, my gosh. I had no...
Oh, my gosh. But I had to duck out into a restroom so we could hear each other. So
oh, no, that's wonderful. Well, here, let me...
The landline in the special ladies' room.
Oh, you're in a special ladies' room?
Yes, well, as you know,
I can hear the convention in the background, actually. Now that,
yeah, no, if this is soundproof, listen, let me explain this to you, because Marcus and I have such a big job here. We have been tasked with segregating all the unclean ladies who are menstruating at the convention center, because we cannot have them mixing and seated next to regular people, and we can't have them dining in the same dining hall.
Right.
So until they are clean, we have to keep. So they have their own bathroom. They have to wear special shoes, and of course, they must remember to leave their shoes with Nancy when they leave. Yes, I'm talking to you, Phyllis.
Anyway, hold on for a second. How do you determine which women are unclean, I guess, or having their time? I mean,
without getting too crass, first of all, they have to fill out every day a questionnaire and also have a pH test taken every day to weed out any women who may be fudging a little bit with the truth, so they can see exciting speakers like the man from Staples or Condi Rice or or anything like that, because they want to see all the diversity and the excitement. Did you see Chris Christie?
I did see Chris Christie.
Oh, plus-size Governor Chris Christie. He's a big, beautiful, curvy governor. And you know what, Sam? It is all about respect, because I was talking to one of his coworkers, Paulie Walnuts. Do you... Governor Chris Christie, one of his co-workers, his name is Paulie Walnuts.
I feel
and then
like
there
I've
was Joey Franchese and Richie Aprile, I think were their names.
I think that's the
and a
isn't
guy called Uncle June.
No,
anyway, they were so friendly.
Sopranos. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Anyway, they said that Marcus and I, when we next time we were in New Jersey, we could go with them to a club called the Bada Bing. I think it was called the Bada Bing or something. But they said we would have a lot of fun, and Marcus seemed very intrigued.
I can't help but think
with
you
Christopher
are
Moltisanti.
Confusing The Sopranos, which was a TV show, with Chris Christie, who is the real
I've never
governor.
Heard of that. I've never heard of that. But also, there was I met a number of the wives of the New Jersey delegates. I met Big Ange and Drita and Renee Graziano and Wait. Karen and Carla.
Karen
Gravano, I believe her name was. I believe
really
her father's known
sure
as
Sure about this. But so you met the whole...
But Big Ange, what a thrill. Marcus took a very special interest in Big Ange. But anyway, it is all about respect.
Well, so...
And I met Jeanine Turner from television in the 80s, and Victoria Jackson from the 80s, and John Lovitz, and Kurt Russell, and Ted Nugent, and Chuck Norris, and Dennis Miller and Patricia Heaton.
Wow, you really have been just dancing with the stars.
I was just about to say, it was like dancing with the stars. And as you may or may not know, Marcus has branched out. You know, he had a line of resort wear that you and I have discussed before. Yeah. But now he has branched out, and he's doing dresses for Dancing with the Stars in the tradition of the great Bob Mackie, who used to dress Carol Burnett.
Wait, so you're saying that Marcus Bachmann is now dressing some of the contestants on Dancing with the Stars?
Yes, he's designing gowns
and
movement pants. And his idol is Bob Mackie, who, as I mentioned, dressed not only Carol Burnett, but Cher. He loves Cher. Now let's get to Paul Ryan. He's cute!
I'm sorry?
Paul Ryan is so cute. You know, he reminds me of... You know who else was cute? Ted Bundy was so cute.
Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy was like that articulate and well-dressed and lean. Oh, and I met some of Paul Ryan's friends, Murph and Sully and Fitzy and the Fat Man. Oh, they were wonderful, but they weren't very nice to Marcus for some reason.
Oh, they were bullying Marcus?
They were bullying Marcus for
really?
Some reason.
I wonder
Murph
why.
And Sully and Fitzy.
And
yeah.
So, wait, now, I wanted to ask, what did you think of Paul Ryan's speech?
Let's get this done!
I'm sorry?
Let's get this done!
Let's get
remember
this done.
Said,
that was his. That
was
my
impression of Paul Ryan.
Oh,
when he
yeah.
Said
that,
when
that's
Mitt
his.
Romney
that's sort of
him.
His catchphrase, isn't it? Let's get
yes,
this done.
Did. Yes, which unfortunately, though, we got a call from Larry the Cable Guy's lawyers today.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And apparently, there's a little bit of
but
an issue.
I mean, wasn't Larry the Cable Guy get her done?
Yes, he feels that it's a little too close for comfort.
I see.
And Mike Huckabee. You know what? Fat again. Mike Huckabee, yo-yo dieter. You know what undid him, Sammy, is he bought his dream pants. That'll always get you. If you buy that pair of pants that you fantasize about fitting into, and you diet and you diet, and then you put them on and you finally fit, then it's all over but the crying. You know, anybody, so he wore his dream pants just for one day, and then it was right back up to plus size.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you, first off, I meant to ask you one more thing about Chris Christie. Did you think it was weird?
About respect.
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, that I was just, Paulie Walnut said for me to say that to you.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess what I was asking was, did you
sorry.
Think it was, Did you think it was weird that he really didn't seem to mention Mitt Romney very much?
Unfortunately, you just cut out. What did you ask me about Chris Christie?
Did you think it was weird that he didn't seem to mention Mitt Romney very much?
Why should he? Why should he? He's got enough to talk about. He's got to talk about his sanitation removal business.
Yeah, but wait a second. But
property taxes on the bada bing. He also was frightened that somebody would mention he goes to therapy with Dr. Malfi, which apparently a lot of people don't look
too kind of bad. Confusing him with Tony Soprano, but
I don't know who that is.
Let me ask you another question then. Did you think it was weird that he was talking about, you mentioned it, respect is more important than love, but Ann Romney said that love was more important?
Yes, because she was trying to seem nice.
I'm sorry?
She was trying to come across as a person who has human emotions.
Are you, I don't want to project anything here, but I'm sensing there's like, have you ever had any issues with Ann Romney?
I wanted to at one point use her restroom when I was visiting there, and she would not let me. She said there was a restroom down at a gas station down the road that the company could use, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Wait a second. Anyway, are you saying that Ann Romney does not let her guests use their own, like, the restroom there?
I'm just telling you what happened to me and Marcus. She said there was a restroom down the road at a Shell station, and that someone could maybe give us a ride if we could wait 45 minutes because the person who was driving had to drive their son, Quintus, to his anger management classes.
Uh-huh.
But so we had to wait, and then we were taken to the Shell station, and we used the restroom. Anyway, Sam.
I wanted to ask you another question. This has been in the news.
This is a sore subject for me. I don't want to get upset.
Okay,
about
I won't talk about it anymore. I mean, I don't want to. Todd Akin.
Oh, my God, from Worcester Polytechnic.
He went to
He went
to WPI in Worcester.
You own a parking lot.
Pardon?
Where your father owned a parking lot.
That's right. My dad had a parking lot there in Worcester.
Yeah, it's on your Wikipedia page. Anyway, go on.
And did you, I wanted to hear your thoughts about the idea that a woman could not get pregnant if she was legitimately raped.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. If it is a legitimate rape.
Now,
then the body has ways of cleansing, you know. So what that means is if a woman were to be pregnant, she is a filthy liar. Praise him, white power. Isa Akin Breitbart.
Isa Akin Breitbart. So you're saying that that really pregnancy is almost a litmus test as to whether or not a woman has actually been raped.
Yes, that and holding her feet over flames.
And I'm sorry, holding her...
That and holding her feet over an open flame, and if that doesn't work, you tie rocks to her and throw her into a body of water. But anyway, Samuel, I want to tell you about some other wonderful things that, as you may have heard, there was going to be a hologram of Reagan. That's a rumor that got started. It's actually going to be Clint Eastwood who's going to be speaking. Yeah. But there is going to be a hologram. Listen, for the ladies, this is especially for the ladies who, as I mentioned earlier, most of whom will be segregated. They will see a hologram of Phyllis Schlafly celebrating the defeat of the ERA in 1982.
So you're saying that there's going to be... So the Reagan hologram is not going to happen, but there's going to be a...
But Phyllis Schlafly is going to happen it's the Hall of Holographs at the Tampa Convention Center. And you will see Phyllis Schlafly celebrating the day that the Equal Rights Amendment for Ladies get struck down in 1982, even though people were trying since 1923, celebrating all that hard work, going down the drain. So that's wonderful for the ladies. We're also going to have holographs of Lee Harvey Oswald, Lee Atwater, the guy who shot Martin Luther King and Medgar Evers, the gentleman who shot Harvey Milk. It's going to be wonderful. We're going to have Boss Tweed, Roy Cohn. Then we're going to have the late Ron Silver, but he's going to have a voice actor of Alan Dershowitz.
Wait a second. So you're saying that there's a whole hall of holograms. And
it's the hall of holograms, yes.
And it's I think it's holograms, isn't it? Or
it's a holographic image, Sam. The holographic image. It's just a beams of light, interference of light, perhaps that comes from a source. It's a three-dimensional image formed by the interference of light beams or other coherent life forces to create a three-dimensional image, much like Tupac at Coachella.
I have to say that you seem to be really plugged into what's going on there, but at the same time...
Of course I am, because I'm there. You know what else they're going to get to see in the holograph? Hall of holographs? There's going to be a play put on every day. You can watch the reenactment of the Betty Dukes versus Walmart case go down the drain.
I should just tell people right now that I am talking to...
Kathy, call me Kathy.
Well, former Kathy, former Congresswoman, almost Senator... Catherine Harris, who is live in the Tampa Center for the RNC 2012 in a soundproof room.
This is where we keep the unclean ladies who are menstruating, and then after they're done, their seats are ritualistically burned on a pyre. But there will be reenactments also every day of the famous Betty Dukes versus Walmart case, the civil action of, you know, the women trying to prove that Walmart had discriminatory practices.
Now,
so
what's wonderful
is Nicole Wallace will be the star of that. You know Nicole Wallace. She helped me out a great deal in Florida back in the day.
Now you seem to be on top of all of this, but I get sort of the sense that you're not. I don't know. I get a sense that you're sort of alienated from the rest of the festivities that are going on there.
I'm not alienated from Sam. I'm not in the middle. What am I, an octopus? There are only so many hours in a day for Marcus and I. What more do you want me to do? Listen, not only that, you know who's going to be also speaking tonight? It's a surprise, but now I'm going to have to tell you. Honey Boo Boo. Pageant winner Honey Boo Boo.
Somebody's singing. Wait a second. There's music. I don't know if you'll be able to hear this.
I can't. I'm in the soundproof bathroom for the unclean.
Is that actually...
That sounds like the Doobie Brothers.
I think it is.
Is that the Doobie Brothers?
I think it's Mike McDonald.
Is that Michael McDonald singing?
I think so. I'm surprised that you weren't aware of
it. Taking it to the streets?
Yeah.
Are the Doobie Brothers performing?
No, just him.
I think it's, I'm reading it's Taylor Hicks, the American Idol winner.
Oh, it's the other salt and pepper gentleman. It's the other silver fox. It's not Michael McDonald, no.
They're taking it to the streets.
Taking it to the streets because this is the party of the common man, of the worker. We built it, Sam. We built it. My father came here with nothing. We built it.
Now,
did you understand me?
Well, I mean, did your father really come here with nothing? What do you mean?
No, that's just something they make the signs we were making.
Oh, I see.
Come on, Sam, use your noodle. They just don't get it. They just don't get it. They just don't get it.
Now,
that's the man from Staples.
Now, my understanding is that the schedule now appears to be...
White power! White power! White power! That's another one.
Right. Now, they got somebody playing the sax there.
Did you see me speaking on Monday night? Talking about alien. I'm not alienated. Did you see me on Monday night?
Well,
speaking?
Catherine Harris, Monday night, there was no... The convention was not in session Monday night.
I know, but they said I could speak.
So you spoke, you addressed
spoke
the convention.
On Monday night. Wait, and
was anyone there?
Marcus was there. Honey Boo Boo's mother was there because Marcus said he was going to make her a neck corset to create the illusion of a chin and a neck and a separation between her head and her body. Marcus,
I'm not sure I follow exactly what you're
saying. You'd have to see Honey Boo Boo's mother to follow that one. Also, we have been working very closely with the sponsors of the RNC. As I mentioned earlier, we have Cigar Aficionado, Nativist Guns and Ammo, Seatbelt Extenders, Fatty McFat Khaki Pants Company.
Fatty McFat Khaki Pants Company?
Yes, so you can be bekhakied at any size. Hillbilly Hand Fishing Corporation.
Hillbilly Hand Fishing Corporation? I'm not sure I understand what that is.
It's a way to fish with your hands.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And I say pound for pound, nobody has more vocal delegates and fans than the Republicans. Pound for pound, you will not find. You will not find more heavyweights. Sam, I defy you to find a more dense and passionate and heavy with good cheer.
Heavy
group
with good cheer.
Of
now,
people.
Now, I have to ask you about this. You were down, obviously, in the convention. I wonder if you didn't see the moment of the convention where apparently the Ron Paul delegates were not seated from the state of Maine. They were complaining and cheering, seat them now, something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Puerto Rican delegate came up, or conference speaker, I'm not exactly sure if she was a delegate or not, and she came up to the podium simultaneously, and apparently coincidentally, people started shouting USA ostensibly to quiet the Ron Paul supporters. There was some confusion as to whether or not they were doing that for that reason or for the people at the podium. Can you give me any insight as to that?
Well, either way, it accomplished its goal, right? It either shut the Puerto Rican down or shut Ron Paul down. Who cares, Sam? Jeb Bush, though, he was talking tonight, he was saying, my brother kept us safe. And that is so true, except for the largest terrorist attack in recent history on this soil. He definitely kept us safe, and I would like to go back to those days.
Wait,
where we
which
were
days?
Safe.
No, but yeah,
where we were safe under George Bush, you know, and
except for the big terrorist attack.
Yeah, exactly. But it kept us safe, except for that. Listen, speaking of that Puerto Rican. Hispanics for me, as you know, diversity is the number one thing you can say about the RNC. Diversity, 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 and Hispanics for me. And boy, I think Marcus got carpal tunnel making those signs. But anyway, those in the We Love Ann signs.
I think Marco Rubio is actually speaking before Mitt Romney tonight.
And Craig Romney spoke Spanish this evening. And his grandpa was born in Mexico. He was born in Mexico. And, you know, Jan Brewer, she, you know, much like Mitt Romney. Now, this is when Mitt Romney says to the Hispanics, I won't let you down. You will be deported. And that's a guarantee. He is serious. When Mitt Romney says and Jan Brewer says, we will not let you down. I promise you, if you are stuck on that electric fence, you are going nowhere. We will not let you down.
Not let you down as in not let you down from the fence.
What?
I'm not 100% sure I'm following everything that you're saying.
No, that doesn't surprise me at all. Okay. So as long as, you know, my main concern is that they deport and get rid of, you know, there's that lawsuit that's being waged by who's the man working with Mitt Romney, who's on immigration with Jan Brewer? and he's suing the Obama administration right now to keep the DREAM Act children out of this country.
She's talking about sheriff.
Chris Kobach. Praise him, Kobach. What power, Breitbart.
Oh, Chris, okay. I didn't know. Do you, speaking of Breitbart, do you miss him at the convention? Has that been do people miss Andrew Breitbart?
Of course I miss Andrew Breitbart. Of course I miss his wonderful goodness. You know, sometimes I feel a little better when I see Rance Priebus because they have a similar wonderful quality.
Wait, Rance Priebus?
Rance Priebus and Andrew Breitbart have that similar seething quality that makes me feel good about knowing that they will crush anyone that I might disagree with. But I commune with Andrew Breitbart sometimes in my prayers at night, praise him. White power, Isa Aiken.
You commune with him, and does he ever say anything to you, or?
He tells me websites to check and things of that nature.
So you commune with Andrew Breitbart through prayer, and he tells you websites to check out?
Yes. He just tells me, like, any kind of celebrity gossip from Hollyweird or anything like that.
Oh, celebrity gossip from Hollyweird. Oh, and is there anything that you want to share that we should know about?
Well, I don't know if I don't know if I'm supposed to speak of it yet, but it has something to do with Alec Baldwin and Sean Penn.
Is there a new movie coming out?
Nope.
You don't want you can't say.
My lips are sealed. And you know what? When Ann Romney said that Mitt Romney was not handed that wealth, you know, she was very serious about that. He was not handed $1 million, okay?
Right.
He was handed $250 million. So I don't understand all this nonsense. And Paul Ryan, you know, he was merely upper middle class. I don't know what's wrong with my voice tonight. It's going in and out and getting...
That's
very
right. I imagine you're very excited being in the RNC. I mean, that's got to be
I'm very excited. The necromancy with Ronald Reagan, with Newt and Calista. And, you know, I'm going to find out who does her hair because I will be gosh darned if I'm going to go one more year without doing my hair like hers because she's wonderful.
Can I ask you, like, what? Do you have a job now? Like, what are you doing?
Sam. How many times do I have to tell you about my work in Israel?
Oh, what?
I am always going back and forth to Haifa, for one.
Uh-huh.
You know I have been trying to get the Moshe Dayan wax figure at Madame Tussauds. I've had the devil's own time getting them to agree to do Moshe Dayan. He was wonderful, the king and I. And Westworld. Oh, my God. Moshe Dayan and Westworld was so.
No, Moshe Dayan was not the lead actor in Westworld. That was
what?
I'm convinced that was Yul Brynner.
I don't know who that is.
All right. Well, Senator Catherine Harris, I'm going to let you get back to the festivities there at the RNC.
Well, I can't. I have to stay in the soundproof room for the unclean because, Sam, you know what happens if they allow the unclean women to participate too vigorously in the debate. They get hysteria of the womb, and we have to send them to the nervous hospital.
Oh, I didn't. I'm sorry. I misinterpreted. I didn't realize that you're unclean at this time.
I'm not unclean. Samuel, will you take the potatoes out of your ears? For crying out loud, I am not unclean. Marcus and I have been tasked with segregating the unclean until they are ready to rejoin the fold.
Oh, I see. I understand now. Okay. So, I mean, I do. You seem a little sensitive about this.
I'm very sensitive. Don't call me unclean. If I was menstruating, I wouldn't be allowed to use the telephone. Any fool knows this.
Sorry, I didn't know the specifics of the rules there about the...
You're a terrible Jew. I've said that a million times. You're a terrible Jew. You don't make your wife go to the mikveh after her time.
After her time, do I make her go to mikveh to get... No, we don't. No, I mean,
Typical. You know what kind of a Jew you are? You're a Ponzi scheme of a Jew.
A Ponzi scheme of a Jew?
You're just a job killer of a Jew. Just a Ponzi scheme.
Job killer Ponzi scheme of a Jew? I'm not sure I really follow that.
Be- just figure it out.
All right.
Figure it out. Oh, did I tell you about also the fundraiser we're going to be doing again? Where we have the Punch Mitch McConnell look-alike in the face. You know, we do that every week. It's been so, because as you know, Barack Obama's got all the money coming in from who knows, George Soros most likely. But the biggest way we make money, no, is not Super PACs, is not Karl Rove, is not the Koch brothers, but every time we have a Mitch McConnell look-alike contest, and the winner, you can punch him in the face for a dollar. I cannot tell you how much money we make. I can't tell you how many people want to punch Mitch McConnell in the face.
Well, I have to say, we're talking to near Senator Catherine Harris, who
Hi.
Is...
Hello.
Hello?
Call me Kathy.
Kathy Harris, who is helping with Marcus Bachmann to segregate the unclean women at the RNC so that they don't defile, I guess, the proceedings. Is that, I mean, is
exactly. That... No, that just caused a great distraction. It will contaminate the proceedings, especially in the dining hall.
And of course, you just, you put them in lockdown and you let them get out at one point.
Well, it's not necessarily lockdown. Like I said, there's entertainment. They get to watch the hologram of Phyllis Schlafly celebrating the defeat of the ERA. And they also get to see reenactments of the Duke's Walmart court case where it was thrown out, thanks to Justice Scalia saying that the women had no right to fair treatment and fair pay. And so they get to look at that while they are purging their body.
Purging their body of of sin, I guess. Is that what it is? I'm not, you know, I don't know the specifics.
Well, I'm not going to say sin, but it is on a par with defiling a monument of some kind at the George W. Bush Airport. It would be similar. I should have thought of something better before I started talking, but I couldn't think of anything.
That's fine. I understand.
It's as dirty as a metaphor for something very dirty.
Okay. Well, yeah. Fair enough. And so you're going to be missing are you going to miss Mitt Romney's speech?
No, they're going to have it piped. Well, Marcus and I will have earbuds, and they're going to pipe it in because the unclean ladies aren't allowed to hear the sound of his voice yet.
I see.
They can get it on a replay. They can download it later.
I see.
Or they can read the transcripts, but their ears are not worthy at the moment to hear Praise Him, White Power, Breitbart, Isa Aiken.
You've got all of them there. I mean, all of them. That's pretty exciting. Well,
hello?
Hello. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on? I mean, I
guess we're so excited about Honey Boo Boo. Very excited about Honey Boo Boo. And also, Honey Boo Boo is going to be there. And also, I think it's going to be wonderful. We're going to go to the Bada Bing.
The Bada Bing.
And we're going to meet Big Ange and Richie Aprile and Joey Franchese and Uncle June.
I'm really convinced you've confused, I think, Chris Christie with Tony Soprano. I
don't know who that is. So how could I confuse that? You're talking gibberish again, Samuel.
I just can't.
Why don't you ease up on the straight bar? I know you. I know you're having vodka because you're away from your home right now.
Well,
and you're even going to sneak a cigarette if I know you. You won't. You've quit buying. You haven't quit smoking, but like 90% of Americans, you have quit buying. Dollars to donuts, you're gonna hit some poor soul up for a Camel or some such thing, aren't
well,
you?
No, I'm actually just
on your way home, and then you'll buy a pack of gum. That's what I think you'll do.
No.
You'll buy a pack of gum and stuff like 15 pieces in your fat face.
No, I mean, I'm having a beer right now. I'm but that's
I feel like somebody's going to get a vodka on the rocks. Maybe not now.
Where do you think I am? In a bar?
Oh no, but you're in Midtown. You have to walk home, do you not?
I'll probably take the subway home.
Right, but there's things on the way to and from a subway, and you're with your cohorts. I hear those nasty boys laughing in the background, mocking the Father God.
Well, first of all, I don't think that they're mocking the Father of God. But
the Father God, does God have a father? You are such an idiot. I'm so mad. I'm
getting angry.
You don't even listen to one. The Father of God. Who are you? What's wrong with you? You better get your ass to that yeshiva. I said that last time we talked.
Yeah, wait, no, wait.
Ridiculous.
All right.
The Father of God. How could you?
I don't know the terminology.
You couldn't even say Rance Priebus's name the other day. Don't think I don't listen to your show.
Rance Priebus.
You couldn't say it, though, could you?
Well, I didn't know exactly.
No, you don't. And who's the man who said the message of the meat is the medium? Who? What's that fella's name?
Malcolm?
No. What is it? The message is the medium.
McLaren?
And he made a cameo in Annie Hall.
Yes, Malcolm McLaren.
Marshall McLuhan. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know what's wrong with you.
Malcolm
I don't know.
Gladwell?
You know what? I've had it with you. I'm not fooling around here. If you want me to continue to call and raise your ratings on your program, which I'm happy to do, as a Christian woman, I am happy to help those that have lost their way. I don't care if they are dirty Jews. I don't care if they have darker skin. I will help in any way that I can, and I will pray for you later.
Wait, are you talking about
But
me
I will
being
not sit here.
Jew?
Pardon me?
Did you call me a dirty Jew?
Hello?
I'm sorry. Did you call me a dirty Jew? I was just asking if you were.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Sam.
Yes.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
I don't know. All right. Well, Senator Catherine Harris, I gotta thank you very much for joining us. Tonight. This has been wonderful.
Okay, and just, I appreciate it too, and I'm just, now don't forget, I'll be here with the ladies in the restroom and be studying the heavens and the celestial mechanics to let me know when I can release them, because as you know, it's difficult to do that because the stars are hundreds of miles away. Hundreds of miles away.
I actually think stars are just a little bit more than 100 miles away.
But we just can't know.
Well, no, I mean,
we just know.
More than 100 miles away. We know that.
No, I think there's some things we just can't know. Father God, praise him, white power has not allowed us to know such things.
Well, but he did allow us to know that they're more than 100 miles away.
No, I said hundreds.
Well, they're more than 100, than hundreds of miles, more like thousands.
I don't know. I think that if you went further than that, you'd hit the black sheet with the pinholes in it that let the starlight shine through. You would bounce against it. It's like a tarp. There's a black tarp that the Father God puts over the sky with pinholes in it for the lights from the sun to come through, which is what you call stars.
So you're saying there are no stars. There's just a guy who puts a black sheet out in front of...
Just a guy.
There's
just a guy. And I suppose Joe McCarthy was just a lawyer. I suppose Willie Cohn was just another what have you. I don't even know. But Ted Bundy, oh my God, and Paul Ryan, dreamy. They're so dreamy.
Yeah, no, Ted Bundy, Paul Ryan, both dreamy. Kathy Harris, I got to say, thank you so much. In about 15 minutes, we're going to be hearing from Senator Marco Rubio. We will be playing that speech. And then at 10:25, Mitt Romney will be...
It's going to be the Motor City Madman, right? Mitt Romney, the Motor City Madman.
Wango
Tango, yes, Mitt Romney, the Motor City Madman. Cat Scratch Fever.
I mean, you're not suggesting that was him. I don't know. I'm not sure I follow.
From Michigan.
No, yes.
The Motor City Madman. Yes, the Motor City Madman.
Right.
God, Sam. Ugh. Talking to you is like talking to a metaphor for something that's difficult to talk to.
Oh, well, your metaphors are really escaping you tonight.
I know. I feel exhausted from talking to you. It just drives me insane. I don't know how Nikki, that's her name, isn't it?
My wife?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know. She's a brave woman. I don't know. What's wrong? is there something? Well, never mind. This is a conversation for another time. But
yeah, I think so.
Is she deaf or blind, or is there anything about Nikki that...
You're suggesting there's something wrong with my wife? That's why she married me? Is that what you're trying to get at?
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting it. I'm asking outright. I'm asking in earnest. I'm being totally Ernest Borgnine with you here.
You know, she probably has some emotional issues, but beyond that, I don't think there's any.
Mm-hmm.
Any.
So there was no blackmail involved, or
no, not to my knowledge.
Did you perhaps I don't know. I guess I need to talk to her about this because it really is a puzzle. It's a real puzzle. Especially since, are you still only wearing one or two? Do you still only have one pair of shorts and one pair of pants?
That's, yeah, basically.
So that's still the same?
I'm sorry? Yeah, that's still the same.
Just one pair of long khaki shorts.
You know, Kathy, I have to say, it seems like you're not really being terribly strict in rounding up all of the women with dirtiness right now.
I don't have to round them up, Sam. They are round. Consider them rounded. We are in here for the duration. What else would you like me to do? I cannot leave here until the Father God okays that they can leave this room. I'm sorry to be so emphatic and strident with you, but what are you accusing me of? Listen to me, Sam. I have to stay here with these unclean women until they have proven that they have, and then I've got to burn the seats. Okay, so it's I've got to ritualistically burn the seats. Oh, then I have to fill in the scrolls and the ledgers and all of that. I mean, it's. It will drive anyone crazy.
Hold on for one second.
Who just wants that American exceptionalism to be part of our lives again, who want to know that our best days are in front of us. That's who we need to reach.
Look at Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin.
The planks in the platform of the GOP are the right.
What is she doing here?
That exceptionalism on again, that prosperity, that security again. It's the planks in our platform that are based on time-tested truths.
Where is she?
Common sense, their economics 101.
They seem to be letting her out.
All right. Governor, by the way, you're missing the party. Thank you for being with us. And by the way, we head back to the floor for a special video on the life of Governor Romney.
Oh, here we go.
Land of opportunity.
Okay, I gotta go, Sam.
All right, well, Senator Catherine Harris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Hello.
Bye.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hello.
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 Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, hello.
No, goodbye.
Okay, hello. Hello.
Senator Harris, thank you. All right, that was Senator Catherine Harris. Now we're looking at a video of the Winter Olympics.
Sticks and stones may break his bones, but conservative lies will only make him stronger. Sam Cedar.
Jim from Philly, welcome to the program, Jim.
Hey, Sam.
How's it going?
Going good. I just wanted to call. You haven't been responding to my email, so I just wanted to see if you're finally ready to grow a pair and admit that Obama's as bad as Romney.
You know, it's not that I haven't been responding to your emails. I think we just put it on a filter, and it goes right into our spam folder.
Yeah, you don't really like to handle criticism like that.
Right, right. I'm sorry, what's the question again?
I tell you, are you ready to grow a pair and admit that Obama's as bad as Romney?
You know, I can't really just decide that I'm going to grow a pair, right? I mean, that's biology. I would like to add a couple of inches, too, and frankly, lose a couple of pounds. That's hard enough.
Okay, sure.
What about on torture? What do you say, Jim? What about on torture?
About on torture. Obama's still torturing.
Obama's outlawed torture. I mean, for all the other ills that he's doing, for all the other ills that he's doing, Romney has stated that he will change the policy on torture. What about that?
It hasn't changed. Why are prisoners still dying in Guantanamo? It hasn't changed.
I don't think prisoners are still dying in Guantanamo.
Yes, they are. You're just not listening to the news, Sam, or you're just not listening to the news that goes against your biases.
Okay. And do you have a link to this?
I'll provide you with one. I'm away from my computer right now.
Okay. And, all right, so and what's the other argument? On all things, Romney is the same as Obama.
Yeah, more war, more violations of civil liberties, more economic downturn.
Mm-hmm.
And don't feed me this whole lesser of two evils nonsense.
Well,
anymore.
You just don't think that he's less evil.
No, I think they're both equally bad for the country.
Right. And right. So Romney's plan, this is from today, Jonathan Chait. Largest and clearest point of distinction, the presidential race is the idea of universal access to health insurance. Romney has already stated that he will repeal Obamacare. Now, Obamacare is not my favorite piece of legislation. However, what it does do is that it provides for near universal health insurance. In other words, you cannot be denied if you have a pre-existing condition. Someone that I know fairly well, her mother just suffered a heart attack. And they are going to not provide her with health insurance. Right now, she's in the hospital today. The insurance company, because Obamacare has not kicked in yet in this aspect, they are not going to cover her heart attack expenses because they claim that she had a pre-existing condition. Romney will return us to this status quo. Obamacare won't. How do you address that, Jim? Grow a pair and tell me how you address this.
I address it by saying that Romney's plan isn't right, but if you say Obamacare...
Grow a pair and tell me how you address this. You're a coward. You're a moral coward because you cannot make the decision because you want to dance around and say that you are somehow holy and self-righteous. This is not easy. You need to make a decision.
You know what?
What do you tell that woman who is in the hospital right now and they won't cover her heart attack? What do you tell them?
Now you're taking,
what is
taking
it?
The moral high ground.
Tell them. What do you tell them?
I tell them that their insurance company is wrong.
And?
Well, we need help. I won't deny we need health care reform, Sam, but I don't
we've
think
got
Romney
it. We've got that reform is already on the books, but your Mitt Romney will overturn it.
I don't support Mitt Romney. You
yes,
can't.
You do. Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Yes,
I support
you do.
Gary Johnson. You
Gary Johnson would overturn it even quicker. Gary Johnson doesn't even pay lip service to the idea that government should provide universal access to health care. Why don't you do a little reading about your precious Gary Johnson?
Fine, now why don't you fuck off, you left-wing Limbaugh?
There you go. Sorry, you still on the line? He hung up. The funny thing is, I would take his call. But now he's trying to block his caller ID. I don't care. We know who it is. When Jim calls from the same place, we all roll our eyes. He's a coward. It sucks having to make this decision. It sucks. I'm not happy with it. This is the reality. Adults deal with reality. This is literally like my 7-year-old daughter. What do you want for lunch? We've got turkey or we've got a cheese sandwich. I want a slice of pizza. Well, we don't have any pizza here. Well, I want pizza. Well, we don't have pizza. I want pizza. We don't have pizza. Well, then I'm not going to have turkey or cheese. Well, then guess what? You will not have lunch. I want pizza. There's no pizza. That's exactly the conversation that I just had with that guy. Except for in this case, it's not a question of whether or not you have to stomach eating cheese or turkey. It's literally
I mean, I've had to deal with this in the past 36 hours. Somebody sitting in the hospital having a heart attack, and the insurance company's coming in and saying, we're not going to cover this because we're arguing that you had a pre-existing condition. And whatever you want else to say, and I don't know that there's any show that is covered as thoroughly the problems with the Obama administration in the past 4 years. But Mitt Romney would overturn that on day one, he said. Now, I don't know if he can or will, but I can tell you that if there is a Republican House and a Republican Senate, very likely that he'd be able to do it. Maybe not on day one. And so that's just the reality. Gary Johnson, great. Great. I hope he raises money, and I hope that he can carry his message. He can't even get a substantial amount of Republicans to vote for him, and they all agree with his economic proposals. Gary Johnson is not going to win. And neither is Jill Stein, and neither is Rocky Anderson. That's quite clear at this point. You're in a swing state. You want to help build that party, and you think voting for, you're in a non-swing state. You want to vote for him and build that party? Fine. But to claim in some way that your decision is more moral, you're a child. You're a child. I don't even know how your mommy and daddy allows you to use the phone without them there. It's unbelievable.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I get somewhere the choice was made, the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you?